Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Welcome to the Tackling Life podcast with the great Ray Lewis and me, Dr. Christian Conti. It's a success podcast that tackles life through the lessons of sports. Ray, what's up?
Doc, everything is up, my man. How are you?
I am doing really well. I'm training. Ray, listen, I am training. Like, I used to be in martial arts, and I trained a lot in kickboxing. I did Muay Thai kickboxing, and I'm back into that for my training, and I feel better than ever. I'm telling you.
Man, I'm going to tell you something. You're making me jealous because I'm traveling so much right now that it's hard for me to even think about traveling right now. So it's like crazy the traveling I'm doing. And you know, even when you try to get it in, what you realize is there's a time that you have to work on the mental, and then there's a time that you must work on the physical. And sometimes you got to separate those things. And I think for me, man, I had to take a back seat for a few weeks. I mean, not long, but you know how I am, man. I love to get back at it. And so I get to go home in a day, and I got one more day to push through. I've been on the road for almost 2.5 months. I got one more day to push through, and now I can really go back into this grind before all of this, you know, the Super Bowl come up and everything coming up, man. So I'm excited, man. So good to hear.
Well, you know, yeah, and I mean, you know what? I think it's good for people to know that you can't be all things all the time. Like, you can't be, you know, nonstop with your best physically, mentally, spiritually every day. There have to be moments, there are waves, there are times that things come and go. I think that's important for our listeners to hear, because I think a lot of times people think that you or other people are always at their best every moment and every aspect, and it's just not possible. You can't be in one place training and also in many places traveling at the same time. So that's a really good thing to bring up. I'm so excited today because we're talking about your journey. We are getting closer and closer to that day. I'm so pumped up about it for you to be in the Hall of Fame. I love the last couple episodes, and I want to say this for our listeners too. We're really excited to announce that we're coming back with Fan Fridays. We had those busy months there in the football season, but we are coming back with Fan Fridays. Really excited about that. Have some great questions to address. But here we are talking about your journey, Ray, into the Hall of Fame. Last time we talked about some really fun stories. I couldn't stop laughing thinking about you and Peyton Manning. Laughing, some of the battles you had, but also just some of the fun stuff, like you guys in a pool just enjoying yourselves, laughing and talking. And I wanted to see if we could dig into some more stories like that as we reflect on your career and this journey.
You know what? I'm going to start it off, and I'm going to tell you, share a story with you guys that I think is, you just never know what's going to happen. This is life, right? You just never know. 1995, Kodak All-American, Playboy All-American. I flew out to L.A., and all of these guys are there, right? Keyshawn Johnson, Kevin Hardy, Simeon Rice, Jonathan Ogden, Lawyer Malloy, Teddy Bruschi, Tim Biakaw-Patuka. I can go down the line on how many guys were there. Eddie George. Zach Thomas. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I can just go for days, right? And we mess around, and there's this agent at the time, Dwayne Martin, great friend. He was trying to get me and trying to get Eddie George, but he was really after Eddie George, right? Because Eddie just won the Heisman and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And Doc, we ended up going to his house, man, and you know, we started having this little drinking contest that they used to do at Ohio State called Smashers or something, right?
Smashers.
Yeah, to where you take vodka and you just smash it and then you just down vodka, right? And this is that's how you know you're in your 20s. Your
that's
early
right,
20s.
That's right.
And as we start to, you know, get a little feeling good, you know, and Eddie looks over, which is, and with me, if nobody knows this, Eddie, me and Eddie are two of the best friends ever in life, no matter what we went through on the field. But he looks at me and says, man, if I ever see you in the league, you in trouble. And I say, Eddie, hold on now. I say, Eddie, don't start this. Eddie. I say, Eddie, Big Ten football? I say, that football too slow to deal with us, man. I'm saying, man, we running, man. And it ended up turning into this heated discussion. And it got so heated that we walked outside and got in Dwayne Martin's front yard and started to pull our shirts off to go at each other.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
And Dwayne hopped in the middle of us with a paintball gun and said, this is how we're going to settle this. Okay. You're going to come back up here. We're going to see this tree over there. We're going to see who can hit the tree. And it was fun. And it was funny because it was Eddie George, and he had, oh God, I hate to say his name now because he just passed away, Terry Glenn. Mm. But it was Eddie George and Terry Glenn, may he rest in peace, one of the greatest men, greatest hearts I've ever been around in my life. And him and Terry Glenn, and it was me and Kenny Holmes, who was a defensive end, played for Tennessee many years. And we started shooting this paintball gun at this tree. So that kind of settled us down for a minute, right? And I looked over at Eddie. I said, Eddie, listen to me. If I ever saw you in the league, it's not going to end well. I'm telling you, Eddie. And just so funny that we're drafted in the exact same division. He's with Tennessee. He's with the Tennessee at the time. And it's the craziest thing because they just had a way better team than us. You know, him and when he got with Eddie George and Frank Wycheck. I mean, when he got with Steve McNair and Frank Wycheck. And we transition and get to the league. 1997. We both go to the Pro Bowl. We go to a bar in Waikiki. This is the honest God and truth. Remember now, we were a team that just got on the map. Nobody didn't know who the Ravens was,
right.
Our logos, nobody wasn't familiar with anything. Doc, we get to Waikiki and we get out the car and 500 people, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but at least 300, 400 people run up to Eddie George. And I end up being 499. I'm in the back of the line and everybody's asking me, well, who do you play for? like what, Baltimore who? And it's so funny now because now we're talking about the Hall of Fame. Now we're talking about after your career. Right. But the things that I remember before my career, the reason why I shared that story with Eddie, because Eddie motivated me. Mm. Eddie motivated me to look in another warrior's eyes and realize he's not gonna give, Ray.
Right.
He's not. You're not gonna give. He's not gonna give. So something has to be done. And the only thing was done was I either outwork him, he outworked me. He gonna make some plays. I'm gonna make some plays. But who gonna make the play that count the most, man? And I'm telling you, like, the reason why I tell that story about Eddie, because Eddie inspired me to chase greatness. I mean, I watched Eddie from college, man, and I'm looking at this animal, 6'4", man, running the ball like that, man. And, you know, nobody knew, you know, Eddie did ballet, and this was just, he was always into something that made him better. And I'm telling people, like, the reason why he became a great friend of mine was because it's a very few people I saw actually work that hard.
Yeah, he was a big guy. I know he went to Fork Union Military Academy the year before I went there. I know he was phenomenal in that sense, big. Do you remember your first game against him or some of those early interactions where you finally got to hit him on the field?
Do I remember him? Heck yeah, I remember him. I remember every hit. Doc, it's certain things you don't forget. Okay, that's stuff you don't forget. You don't forget running into a CMI.
I remember one time you told me about your jerseys, and you said, "Do I have my jerseys?" Yes, I have my jerseys. I earned every one of these jerseys.
Yeah. I done had so many people try to buy my jerseys. I'm like, can I buy that? Absolutely not. Those jerseys hurt. Yeah, man. But I tell you, with I remember the early games of playing against them. Like I said, they were just a much better team than us. I mean, Baltimore, my first year, we was 4-12. I mean, we couldn't close a game out for nothing. Had one of the highest scoring offenses in the world with Vinny Testaverde, Derek Alexander, Michael Jackson. Oh, gosh, another guy that's gone. Bro, not to slow down and stop, but, man, there's so many people that we've lost. Right. That's why I tell you, when you live life, you got to live it one time and don't regret nothing. Don't look back. But yeah, we had Vinny Testaverde, man. They went to a Pro Bowl that year, but we was just so bad on defense. You know, we had no chemistry at all. And so every time we played Tennessee, I would have great games against Eddie, but they would always come out on top. And so, for years, 97, 96, 97, 98, there was not really mentioned from a defense perspective. Now I started going to the Pro Bowl my second year. And so that's when I started getting some little recognition. But, you know, that war, I'm telling you, watching them and what they had in Tennessee and what they were building, it was exciting to me because I wanted to build the same thing, right? And I've told you this before. One of the greatest cultures I've ever been around was the Pittsburgh Steelers culture, you know, because that history and that legacy of that was just so amazing, and I wanted to create that in Baltimore.
And you did.
Hold on, wait a minute.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
How soon do we forget?
I tried to distract.
Look at you.
Intentionally trying to not talk about it.
How you do not want to talk about the playoff game?
Oh, I can't talk about it. I can't take it. What kind of clock management was it? I can't take it.
Dog, what?
I was practicing anger management yesterday.
I know you had to be. You had to be, Doc. That was a rough one for Steeler Nation.
Ben is 6'5", and they're gonna go with a pitch on fourth down and 6 inches rather than just have him just jump over and just get that first down. And I don't know how many times they went backwards on trying to go in forward on fourth down. I just don't understand it, why you just don't do a quick sneak right up the middle with a quarterback, especially that size. I don't understand it, Ray.
It's a couple of things I did not understand, but what I will give respect to is the Jacksonville Jaguars on defense are really good.
They're very good. I'm not taking away anything from Jacksonville. I just feel like some decision-making, my goodness, I don't want to talk about it. Yeah. I just felt like the decision-making, please, I got to understand that. Well, from a linebacker's perspective, though, that quarterback sneak is so difficult when it's just a few inches. Like, it's not, I just don't get it, you know what I mean?
I don't know why you would run a toss on a fourth down and one. If you're that afraid of Calais Campbell and how big they are, you know, in their front four, I get that. But to run a toss against one of the fastest defenses in football,
yeah,
that has corners that actually come up and tackle, is just not a good decision, Doc. And then the other decision that got me is, why would you onside kick when you have two timeouts left?
Oh my goodness!
And you have the 2-minute warning. If you kick the ball off and you stop them on first down, you go to the 2 minute warning and still get the, and if you do your job and get the ball back, you have a minute and something left on the clock.
Do you see, I mean, like my head in my hands right now because of that. Because, had they, and then on top of that, on the first, when they did get the ball, there were 2 minutes and 9 seconds. They ran a play that could, there was down to 2 minutes, 6 seconds. They could have called a quick timeout and then had that and the 2 minute warning, still had their 2 minutes, two timeouts. I just, the decision making was very, it was tough. It's easier on Monday morning to step back and look at what could have happened yesterday. So I definitely am not going to criticize. I'm just questioning. I don't understand it. It's challenging.
It's the same thing I said when I'm watching the Atlanta Falcons. You get on the 3 yard line in Philly and you know Matt Ryan does not have the ability to run the ball for whatever reason he can run, but he won't run. And then you don't run the ball one time. You have two timeouts, a minute and 19 seconds on the 3 yard line. And you don't give Freeman or you, oh my God, let me tell you something. You know, when you watch, I'm gonna share this with you, Doc, because this is what I started to learn about the game of football. The great teams, not individual play, the great teams. The great teams, and I want somebody that's listening, become a historian and look up these facts. Look up the facts of how many less mistakes the great teams make in crucial decisions, in crucial, in with crucial moments on the line. You know, everybody, you know, Ray, you know, goes crazy about, you know, New England, the Patriots. But I want you to watch their decision making. They play chess while everybody else is playing checkers. And, you know, you think about these coordinators, these offensive coordinators who think they're so smarter than everybody else, but they forget the game is about going north and south. It'll never change.
Yeah.
East and West only works a few times.
And tell me this before we'll take our first break. I have to know how, as doing everything you did, you've said this a million times. You led your life by this, and you've taught this. Since you retired, which is greatness is a lot of little things done well. So yesterday when the Saints missed that tackle in that other game, when he didn't wrap up, when there was no time remaining, when all he needed to do was let him catch it, just hold on to him, tackle him. What were you thinking watching that as you set that example for people? Wrap your arms.
You know what it showed you? It just shows you that people are not totally in tune to the situations in games. And what I mean by that is the entire New Orleans Saints defense was supposed to be having one conversation. Back up to the 20, let nobody out of bounds, and all we have to do is tackle the man because they have 10 seconds on the clock, they do not have a timeout, and they have no time to do nothing else. And so when you're having that conversation as a unit, then when you see someone make the mistake he made, Doc, I've always said this. There's two type of people in sports. There's people who make plays, and there's people who watch plays be made. It's simple. Forget what he did, why he did it, because I still don't understand it to this day.
Yeah.
That if you wanted to be remembered, now, you can become popular, and he's very popular right now for doing something he shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But if he wanted to be remembered, he delivers a hit on Diggs on that fourth down, tackles him to the ground, and run off and say, look what I just did.
You just said the key, too, as a unit. And then I like the way you phrase that because this is everybody. Like, yes, that man needed to learn what he needed to learn, and I hope he grows from this situation. But as a unit, they needed to have had the conversation. This is our situation. And this is something, and we'll move into break from this, but this is something that people can take in life, no matter what you're going through in life as a unit, as an organization, as a family. You can step back and ask yourselves, what are we going through? We call this show Tackling Life. In any aspect of your life as a unit, what can you talk about to prepare for whatever situations are coming your way? Hey, we're going to keep plugging away at all of this Tackling Life right after this. Stick with us. All right, we're back, and my goodness, there's so much going on, but I want to come back to your journey, Ray, because there's so much fun stuff. Like, I love listening to these stories. I have some questions for you about some of the people that you played with, some of the things that you did. I kind of want to go to the hits. I've seen some hits. Well, I've been watching some of your hits recently. There was a great hit one time. You hit Chad Ochocinco, and he got up and he stumbled. And he was like, I hit Ray by accident. You had just leveled him. Some of your hits were from the legendary hits. What are some of your favorite hits that you did that you, when you think back on? What are some of your favorite hits?
Man, can I? I'm gonna combine hits with plays. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of my most memorable plays ever. We was playing the San Diego Chargers at the time. They were San Diego. In 1998, and Junior Seau was playing over there, but on offense, they had who I've always loved and admired, which was Eric Metcalf.
Mm-hmm. I loved him too.
And you remember, yes, oh my gosh, but you remember how fast Metcalf was?
Fly.
Oh my gosh, he can flat out fly, right? And in 1998, we're playing them, Doc, and he catches a slant backside on our slot receiver, on my slot corner, Deron Jenkins. I think it was Jenkins that was covering him. And he catches a slant backside. And when I turn around, he's about 5 to 7 yards already in a dead sprint. But, Doc, this is when I came from Miami. All we know is running.
Yes.
That's all we know. And I took out after him, Doc. And 67 yards down the field on the 7-yard line, I caught Eric Metcalf by the collar.
That's unreal.
And I pulled him down. And I will never forget this. Marvin Lewis and as well as Antonio Langham came to me and said, that play will forever define your career. Mm. The next play, they threw an interception in the end zone to Antonio Langham. And I'm telling you, and we ended up losing that game. We lost a lot of games, but yeah, it's gonna be funny. But I remember us getting in film, and I remember how many times Marvin Lewis rewind this film and said, I just watched a middle linebacker run one of the fastest guys we've ever had play this game down, and it was all based off effort.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, Doc, that play for me set a standard in my career that I wasn't taking no breaks. That when the ball snapped, beat me to the football. Cause I'm gonna be there. Mm. I don't care what nobody say. It don't matter who trying to block me, how many of them, it don't matter. I'm gonna find a way to be at the party. That's what we call the ball, the party. Yeah.
But that exemplifies what your career is the effort, and to be able to track somebody down like that. I mean, Ray, and think about how much, cause he was a smaller guy. So you had to outweigh him by 40 or more pounds easily.
Listen, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Not even 40, probably 60. Jeez. Yeah. Cause you know, he was little scat back. But I'm gonna be honest too. 1998, I may have been, oh my gosh, maybe 220, maybe 220, 230, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah, I wasn't 250, 255 when I became that thumper. You know, Doc, I had to go into life and change to become a thumper.
Thumper.
Yes, Doc, you got to say it just like that, thumper. Because I had to deal with, think about my division. I had to deal with Fred Taylor twice. I had to deal with Eddie George twice. I had to deal with Jerome Bettis twice, and I had to deal with Corey Dillon twice.
Mm.
That's who I had to see every year, and they were running. And this is when it was old school football, right? Yeah, this right. wasn't about no trickery. This right. is north and south, downhill, put a man on a man, and I can have success.
Yeah, that was a different time. It was a different time.
It was a different time, but the culture of sports remain intact. I ain't trying to trick nobody. I ain't trying to trick nobody. And man, and so, but that play in 98, I'm telling you, it forever changed the way I looked at the game. And then when I started to really evolve into this guy, you know, you bring up the Ocho Cinco thing. It was certain people I don't even play with. It's like receivers and tight ends. I'm like, child, please, y'all better stop playing. y'all better stay out there and don't come in here. There's something called a no fly zone in here. And as long as 52 in here, it's just a good day for you not to come this route.
There were some big tight ends. Were there tight ends that could I know there were, so like Heath Miller is a big tight end. He was a big tight end. I wonder if there were some tight end. I don't know, receivers. I mean, it's a different ball game. I know you had some battles. I know that Hines Ward took a lot of shots. you hit my boy Hines a lot. But were there some tight ends or receivers that you, not that they were going to be able to hang, but they were like, okay, now these guys are going to be coming for me, especially on those crackdown blocks.
You know what's funny is, and this is where the game has changed. When we were playing, when I was playing coming up, Doc, that position was for one reason, the enforcer.
Hmm.
Yeah, this wasn't no, you know, nowadays, you know, as good as backers are now, you know, like a Luke Kuechly, whatever, they're just, you know, just making tackles.
Right.
I wasn't making tackles. I wanted to punish you. I wanted to let you know it was not a pretty day. If you feel you bold enough, I understand you a man. I understand you put on your pants one leg at a time, just like I do. Then I'm also going to understand it's a educated decision on what you want to do with your career if you're trying to come in my way, man. So that position, if you think about the Mike Singletaries, if you think about the Willie Lanier's, the Dick Buckuses, if you think about let's even go from that position. Let's go to the Ronnie Lott's, man, the Steve Atwater's. That we're taking out something in today's game that was the reason why guys like that played the game. For that one hit in the game that made everybody say, ooh,
you had that. You had that hit on Jerome Bettis. I mean, I'm telling you, it was watching him at his 260 plus running full speed, and you hit him so hard one time. It was in Pittsburgh. I had just pulled this highlight up today. I was watching these highlights. I mean, really, anybody that hasn't really had a chance, any of the younger listeners who haven't really had a chance to watch your career from back in the day, go on YouTube and look at this. But you hit Jerome Bettis so hard one day. I mean, the sound, I can't believe he got up. I really can't believe he got up.
Well, once again, I just saw him the other day when I was down there for the Under Armour All-American game. And it's funny, man, because me and him are great friends. But I'll never forget Dan Dierdorf was doing the commentary on that game. And they ran a screenplay. And, you know, like I said, back then, your reputation wasn't based on how many Twitter followers you had. Your reputation was based off what the dude you was playing against, felt like when the game was over.
Did you guys, have you ever talked about that hit? Because that hit was like, that was a legendary hit.
Not only did we talk about those hits, man, but see, me and him has to be careful when we with each other, right? Because we're touchy-feely guys, you know? Just like when I walked up on him, I grabbed him so hard, and I told him the first thing I always say, I said, stop playing now. I ain't finna get into that. But man, I'm telling you, like, those hits, Doc, it was a level of respect that came, because you gotta remember now, these are full speed car crashes.
Yes.
Like ain't no, you know, I'm finna, you know, duck. Don't duck on me.
Well, look, well, and think about it. This, we talked about this in the past on this show, but when they did that sports science show on you and they showed you hitting harder than a battering ram on a door, I don't even know that hit. I think you went faster on this one particular hit that I'm talking about with Jerome, the same one you're talking about with Dan Dierdorf announcing, where you hit him moving at that speed. So it was unreal when we talk about the measuring the speed and power that you actually would hit with. I mean, it was unbelievable. Let's go to some questions I have for you about some of the toughest, if not your best, the toughest running back you ever played against. Who would either the toughest or the top three? Who would your toughest running back you ever played against?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, Doc. In college, the most, and for many years, one of the toughest running backs I ever played against, tragic ending to his life, tragic ending to his story, but was Lawrence Phillips. I'm talking about just a straight football player. I'm talking about, listen here, let's get it, buckle up both chin straps, because I'm here all day. And in 94, I came from about 10, 12 yards off. Now I was about just 205 at the time. But I hit this man so hard in the national championship game. And I hit him, and I knocked him back by 3 yards. And he shook it off, Doc. He closed his eyes, and he shook it off. He said, Ray, you're going to have to kill me out here. I'll be right back. I said, Lord, Sapp, we got a football player over there. I said, Sapp, buckle up, because this is going to be a long day. But when I got to the league, man, I had one of the best running backs, I'm telling you, of all time, that doesn't get the credit he should get, is probably Fred Taylor. Yeah, Doc, let me tell you something. You ain't seen nothing that big and can move that fast. You got to remember, Fred running 4.3s, you know. So wow. Fred coming up. Yeah.
That's fast. That's man, ridiculous
Doc,
fast.
Doc, at 230, 225, 230.
Jeez.
He was the one guy we used to watch film with. He's the one guy we used to watch film with. And we used to say, listen, do not peek your head inside. Stay outside. Because if he get outside this box, he outrunning definitely linemen. Definitely linebackers. DBs, ain't no chance of catching Freddie T. Mm. And man, I'm telling you, man, he gave us problems, Doc. He gave us problems. And man, I'm telling you, just skill-wise, and then LaDainian Tomlinson was one of the most craftiest running backs I probably ever faced in my life. Mm. But Marshall Faulk was like running on air. Like to watch Faulk run the football, it was like running on air. You know, and then, Doc, I mean, I can go so many places with running backs because I was a fan, right? And so for me being a fan, I respected these guys much differently than just competing against them. I saw them as a real opportunity to take my greatness or my level of greatness to another level by competing with that type of not only physicality, but that type of ability.
So let me ask you this, while studying those running backs, have you ever seen a running style like Le'Veon Bell's style?
Yeah, and you know, I think the one person, he did it a little bit differently. He did it with much more force. But if you think about the way Barry Sanders ran the football, because of the lack of offensive line he's had over the years, he always had to start, stop, start.
Yes.
Yeah, when I see Le'Veon doing that, the first person to come to my mind is Barry.
That's because a compliment, because Barry Sanders was, I think, the greatest running back.
He was so good in that stopping and starting, you know? And one of the things that made them so good, and I want you to think about this, that people don't think about why Le'Veon Bell is so skillful with doing it. His feet are never out of balance, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
So when he makes that lateral cut, he's not extending his legs so wide where he comes back. I can guarantee you this. If you watch Le'Veon Bell running style, there's very few times that his feet go outside of his shoulder width.
That is a phenomenal point. Because talking about all this retraining in martial arts and bringing up all the stuff that I trained in for so long when I was young, and teaching my daughter. That's how I kind of got back into it, as I started teaching my daughter. And as you go through it, like, that being in balance is a key. And that's a part of life, is a key thing, is being in balance. So that to me is fascinating. That's the part that you see with him.
Cause I studied him. So I studied him. And let me tell you why I studied him. I studied him because I studied Barry. And now Barry is different. Now let me tell you why. This is where height plays a role. See, Barry's a much shorter, so Barry is closer to the ground.
Right.
So Barry's steps is like tree trunks when he steps. So his lateral movement is much wider than his shoulders. Because that's where his strength is. His strength is in his thighs.
See,
I
was going to say, like, we've talked before about Bruce Lee and watching Bruce Lee and how he turned things. Like, Bruce Lee's one leg was shorter than his other, which is why he actually started the style that he started. And from listening to you right now about you, the master, watching another master in Barry Sanders, seeing, okay, he was shorter. And so someone might look and say right off the bat, well, bigger is better. And here, this running back is shorter, yet he was so phenomenally great. And what I'm hearing you say is he took advantage of the fact that he was shorter and used it to his advantage.
100%. That's what made his stopping and starting so dominant. He would extend so far that you would commit to that side thinking he's going there, but because of his short, stocky body, he could change direction so quickly that it'll blow your mind.
I just got really, really excited, because anybody out there, I just want to stick with football for a second. Any young person out there listening and getting to hear your wisdom on this, I think you just gave a key that if I'm a young person right now, I'm doing this all day long. Practicing balance, because that's something that you can do even when you're not on the field. That's something that you can concentrate on all as you're walking, when you're in your room, just sitting there in front of a mirror, but constantly practicing balance. And that, to me, Ray, I feel like you just handed a lot of young people a very absolute key to being successful.
You know what makes, not to make the transition to animals, but do you know what makes cats so dynamic is their balance. That's the difference of a cat and a dog, right? A dog runs through force. A cat runs by grace. And so cats are much more under control than dogs are. But when you think about some of the greatest runners of all time, go back to Eric Dickerson's, go back to Tony Dorsett, go back to Walter Payton's, go back. When you think of what they were poetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you think of Le'Veon Bell, Le'Veon Bell is saying, I'm going to let everybody else use their thrust up. I'm going to save my thrust until I see the exact hole I want to hit. So it's tip, 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 tip out. Tip, 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 hit. And so if I was to play against him, what I would make him do is he would have to choose. And what I mean by that is the same hole that he's looking for, I'm going to tease him to make him think I'm going to go in that hole that he's tipping in. But I guarantee you know he's got to come back to where now this is where people playing against him don't play against him as a team. And I watched it yesterday against Jacksonville. And that's why I said to you earlier, Jacksonville is a good defense, but they have a long way before they become a great defense. Mm. Now, let me tell you why. One of the reasons why is because it takes time. Doc, if I could show you, if I can give someone the example of this, when you pull out your shoestring, when you feel your shoestring loose, you have to go to the bottom of your shoe, tighten it from the bottom, and keep coming up, right?
Right, right.
Because why? Because you're dealing with one string. See, on defense, when you become a great defense, you're on one string.
Mm. Oh, man. That's an awesome analogy.
This is when football becomes fun. When you know there's no holes or no looseness in the shoestring because everybody is tightened up and doing their job, then now I will make him come to the hole that he has to come to.
I have chills. I love that. Because yeah. Everyone has to be one string.
Listen, this is what's crazy. This is what's crazy. And this is what makes... And I want you to go through the history. If we have visuals, I'm telling you, something that we maybe need to think about with our podcast as we go further is actually having a way where we can start to record these things where you can show a visual. Mm-hmm. Because if I can show you the visuals of all of the great defenses of what it, not great individual plays, I'm talking about front seven. I'm talking about the passing game when everybody is on one accord. Mm. The Jacksonville Jaguars gave up, I counted, they gave up 8 big plays yesterday. They gave up 5 in the run game, and they gave up 3 in the passing game. And guess what the result was? They was not on one string.
Mm.
See, they got so many great players that sometimes greatness says, oh, I'm going to do it myself. But if you take the liberty to do it yourself, you're going to leave a hole or you're going to leave that shoestring untied.
I love that analogy. And it's ego that says it. Ego that says it. I'm going to do it by myself. Right? Ego is the one that ego, our ego says, I'm going to do this by myself. But when you can set that ego aside and be a part of that unit and be a, and understand that you're a part of that one string, right? That's analogy. This is getting, I'm excited about it because it applies as everything we talk about to so many things in life, but that is huge.
Yeah, in life though, but it's the same string in life, right? It's the same string, mind, body, spirit.
Yep.
If mind, body, and spirit, if all of those things ain't tightened up the same, then somebody gonna be able to look at your life and say, oh, your life untied.
Oh man, I love that.
Yeah, Doc. Like, man, you got to tie things up. And when you, that's what makes great teams so hard to stay together. Because shoestrings, they don't have a choice. The only choice they have is when you pull it, it must go.
Oh.
See, but when you talk to people and you push or pull people, some of them can go, some of them can't go, some of them hesitate, some of them doubt, some of them fear. But, man, when you got everybody on one accord, man, I used to look at Rod Woodson. Oh, my gosh, let me tell you guys a story. Man, I used to look at Rod Woodson and said, look here, you handle the back end, I got the front end. And I'd never forget it. Rod Woodson walked up to me one day and said, Suge, let me tell you something. You handle the front seven, I got this back end. And from that day, I said, I don't care who we play. Ain't nobody can beat us because we on one accord.
When obviously I want to hear some stories about you because you had Rod Woodson, you had Ed Reed. I mean the way you were dialed in with your defense
You were on this one string. This was the epitome. I love this analogy. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're staying on this. So just stick with us. We'll be right back after this. Man, I love this, Ray. I love this whole idea of one string. Like, I'm really, really excited about it. You started right before the break telling us about Rod Woodson, how you trusting because you knew that. So is there something that our listeners can take to learn how to get people? How did you get everybody on one string? I understand when you understand you, because it sounds to me like part of it for you and in your hole was trusting someone else was going to take care of his hole. So it was going to like, okay, I know Rod Woods is going to take care of that area. I'm going to take care of this area. So is it trust? How do you get everybody on that same page?
Let me tell you how you get everybody on that same page. I told you this. We talked about this a few weeks ago. You asked me what's the true definition of being the man. I told you it was being the example. If you want to make something get on one string, if you want to make a total defense play the way it's supposed to be, become the example. When you walk in a meeting room on practice and coach tell you that you got the A-gap, and not only do you do the A-gap, but you do way more by getting to the A-gap and then tearing up anything in the A-gap. People, your peers respect that, man. Man, you become a leader just by people watching you, Doc. You ain't got to say much sometimes. Sometimes, man, you got to go in there. And when you're trying to get everybody on one string, I used to tell everybody, beat me to the football. If you faster than me, if you a DB, then beat me to the football. I told Warren Sapp in college, Dad, Big Daddy, I love you with all my heart, but it's one thing I'm going to tell you you're going to have a problem with, and that's beating me to the football. my roommate, I'm sitting right here in the apartment now, Rohan Marley. Rohan played weak side linebacker with me. I used to tell Ro all the time, Ro, you ain't beating me to the football. But you know what it did? It created a one-string mentality. It created saying, if my guy is going to do everything he needs to do right, then guess what? I need to do everything I'm doing right. And then it goes from 2 to 3, from 3 to 5, from 5 to 7, and then you go from 7 to 11. And you know most 7-Elevens open 24 hours.
That was a great transition right there. That was a great transition. I'm really genuinely, like, my hand is tired from writing so fast because I'm sitting there jotting notes down as you're talking. I think this applies. I know this applies to anyone from organizations to your family to operate on one string and to do it by taking care of your job, not focusing on what other people should or shouldn't be doing or did or didn't do, but on what you're doing by leading, by being the example. This to me, my goodness, this is really one of those light bulb moments where it's kind of like, to get on this analogy, to understand this analogy, this is transformative for teams. Like, this is the winning recipe right here for teams.
Everything. Okay. So I like to give people visuals. I like to give them visuals that you can see, like, right now. So listen to this. When you watch the games this past weekend, I want you to think about this. Every big run came from somebody making a selfish decision to simply say, this one play, I'm too tired to do my job. This one play, I'm going to do it this way. But let me tell you where the accountability is. And this is where I go back to that Saints play at the end. If you're accountable to your teammates, then you don't assume they know it. You communicate it to them to make sure they know it. That's what makes greatness great. That's what makes greatness the most consistent thing you will ever do in your life. It's because you have figured out the formula on how to make someone else next to you consistent by simply communicating with them. Why do divorces happen, Doc? Why do relationships break up, Doc? Why do people take me? You've said this many times. People in life, why do people take what you do and they take what your actions but never understand your intent?
It comes down. I agree with you. Communication. Think about all from arguments, from fights that break out when people are, when you're in the supermarket, when and there's people getting upset. It's communication. If people understood each other's stories, if they understood what was going on, that would change communication. I really have to highlight this because the way you phrase that, every big run happened because someone just says, basically, this one play, I'm too tired to do my job. When I taught counselors and trained marriage and family therapists, I used to say to them, I said, if you ever ask me is this going to be on the test? You might as well just quit the program because I don't want you to be in this field. And the reason why I get so upset about that is I'd say, look, don't ask me if it's going to be on the test, because if it's in the book, if it's in the lectures, it's got a chance to be on the test. Because which client are you going to sit in front of one day when they're going to tell you something and you're going to be like, you know what? I didn't really study your issue. I was too tired to study your issue in school. I didn't pay attention to that chapter. So you can't ever sacrifice someone. Every person matters. Every interaction matters. So this one play, I'm too tired to do my job. That's a very important statement to understand, because this is what happens in life. Yes, it places a lot of emphasis on us to do our best all the time. But as you said earlier, when you're thinking about some of the players, some of your friends, some of your brothers that you lost because they've passed away. I saw today the lead singer of Cranberries passed away. Life goes by so quickly, and this is our time right now. So to take advantage of that and not be too tired to give our best in every moment. I'm not saying you have to be the best in every moment, because that's unrealistic, but what you can do is give the best with what you have in every given moment.
Doc, this is the hardest thing you ever do, but it's the easiest thing you will ever do once you do it, is you just simply have an open conversation with somebody. Now, they say that's hard. They say it's hard, because they say when people stuck in their ways, they stuck in their ways. But if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
Ted Marchibroda, my first head coach, he passed to. He's always say something. You don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And I looked at Rod Woodson one day and I said, Paco, I called him Paco. I said, do you trust me? He said, bro, I trust you with all of my heart, bro. I say, do you? I say, Paco, cause listen, man, where I am in life right now, bro, I got to get to a Super Bowl. He said, why? I say, Paco, because I want to see you touch a Lombardi trophy, man. Doc, this wasn't even about me. Mm. I wanted to see one of the greatest to ever do it, who was treated wrong because of an injury leaving Pittsburgh. Mm. Right?
Yep.
They say somebody curses another man's blessing.
Yeah.
So I'm glad y'all let him go.
I didn't want them to let him go, I'll tell you that.
But when I looked at this man in the eye and he said, what is it you want me to do? I said, first thing I want to do is I want to learn what it means to be great. I want to know how to work out. But most importantly, listen to me. What I built up front in this front seven, ask Rod Woodson this conversation if you ever ran into him. Ever. Because this man, me and this man bought into something, man. This is what I'm trying to tell somebody. Let's listen in today. Sometimes if you want things to change in life, communicate with people. See, that's the problem with social media. There's no communication in social media. You pick up and you read articles and you just post what your reaction says post. That's the most ignorant thing I've ever seen that our world has fell into. And that's why I keep going back to the scripture. If many are called and few are chosen, then the hell with social media and all these people that just want to tweet and follow and like. Mm. Because I'm trying to find the few
that's willing to do it for change. Mm. I'm trying to find the few that's willing to have communication with people instead of just judging someone based off what you think. Oh, my bad. Oh, I forgot. You want to join the crew because everybody else following they're liking it.
Yep.
I dedicated something to that guy. And I looked at Rod Woodson and I said, Rod, don't worry about the run. You just make sure the ball don't get over your head. Mm. I don't care what nobody say. I don't care whoever, know what nobody wants to compare. The greatest defense in the history of 16 games. You pull up the numbers and you pull up any number of any other defense and you, and I will go man per man and you show me where they better than us at. And that wasn't because of talent. That was because everybody bought in to be a part of the shoestring.
Mm. Mm. Did you have that analogy back then?
I had that analogy in college. That's what made us so dominant in college. I used to always tell Sap, Daddy, we on a string. We on a string. When you go front side, don't come back. Trust me. Because once you go front side, I'm cleaning up your backside.
Wow. Wow. That was 2000. That was the year of your the defense. That was the statistically best defense ever.
Yeah. By far.
2000. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, there's so much. I love this, man. This is some of the most fun is talking about this. I mean, and all of this, let me remind our listeners, is en route to, you know, your journey to the Hall of Fame. I mean, what a beautiful legacy. 17 years. A legend, living legend. I mean, from the beginning of your career to the statue, to what's about to happen here in a couple weeks. So I'm definitely honored to be a part of this. None of these shows, I was going to say like, okay, we're wrapping up this journey. This is something that's ongoing. And today was just another great step in that. Love the shoestring analogy. I love that because that applies to everybody in so many aspects.
But I'm going to end it with this. I know we've been going for a while. I'm going to end you with this, Doc. My life came together when I started to do everything from a shoestring perspective. When I stopped just working on the physical, but I had to understand why spiritually I had to work on as equally as I worked on the physical. When I started to realize that things were broken in my life, when I started to realize that I had to be a father, I had to be a provider. I had to be a leader on and off the field. I realized one thing, that if you don't tighten up in places that you know are loose, you can never keep your life together. It's like trying to keep on shoes, Doc, and never tying up your shoestrings.
Yeah.
They're supposed to keep your feet intact so that you can do work. So imagine your life. And this is what the challenge is for people today. Take a pen and a pad and write down things that you need to tie up in your life. And if you're the leader of a team, have communication with them so you can weed out who want to be a part of the shoestring and who don't want to be a part of it. Because one thing I'm going to tell you now, everybody won't be a part of that pool. Everybody won't be a part of that pool. So sometimes you got to be willing to let go of it and retire. See, so sometimes that means you got to be willing to let some people go.
I mean, this analogy even comes back to the very beginning when we were talking about you're traveling right now, so you're not able to do the same level of intensity workouts as when you're not traveling as much as you're traveling. So when you think about a shoestring and you think about the individual holes that are there, you're working on mind, body, and spirit. Yes, we're all doing that. But we're not all doing that. You and I are doing that. But hopefully lots of people are doing it, and we want you to be working on mind, body, and spirit. But I think this part about being easy on yourself when you realize you can't do all things, you can't be going through every hole all at once. So in other words, there are moments where you have to be putting the shoestring through one particular hole as you're lacing it up. And hopefully I'm being clear about this is that if you can't be, you gotta be easy on yourself in those moments where you're not able to be doing absolutely every aspect, every moment. Because I know, I guess where I'm coming from, and maybe I should be clear about my intentions, is when I know a lot of times I'll grade myself. My wife always says, you grade yourself at the end of every day. And sometimes I wish you wouldn't grade yourself at every end of every day. But if I haven't done stuff, mind, body, and spirit, to the level where I'm satisfied with what I did, then I'll be a little bit hard on myself. So sometimes it needs to step back and say, there is an off season. There are times when you can't do all those things every moment of every day. You're going to emphasize more of one over the area of the other. But the point is what you said, which is to ultimately have that shoestring perspective where you are dealing with all three and you are getting them all on the same page.
That's what life is. You got to be, if you're not about, look, I'm going to end this from a Hall of Fame perspective. If I didn't put enough plays together, but before the plays, it had to be practice. Before the practice, it had to be training. Before the training, it had to be a lot of praying. Before the praying, it had to be just a simple opportunity. And if you do not have your life tied up when the opportunity comes, majority of us will watch it pass by. And that's why when we're talking about the hall now, the reason why I'm so humble when I think about this, because I know some times in my life where my shoestrings was untied. I know times in my life where things was just untied, man. But I realized if I got with the right people, if I put my life together, if I worked on me, if I worked on me, and if I purely made effort between me and me, I don't know too many things I can't accomplish in this world. If I take my vision and write my vision, if I make my foundation as strong as it's going to be, if I never let my tongue come out to curse someone or hurt or harm someone, if I've always lived to please God, regardless on what my actions were, I'm talking about my intent in everything I've always did has never been to confuse or harm or disrespect nobody. But if you had to tell me to choose man, fame, or God, I'm choosing God every time. So whether you look at me and think I'm wrong or not, I got my life tied up a long time ago when I chose to be on the side of God's team. And I ain't never going against that. So when we talk about the Hall of Fame, there's something that's brewing, Doc. And I'm going to tell you this and I'm going to end you because I know we running long. When I get on that stage, what I'm writing right now will not only change lives, but it will let people realize if they've wasted the time that they've had on earth.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love you, man.
I love you too. And I'm so excited for your Hall of Fame speech. I'm telling you, I'm so excited.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. All right.
To our listeners, we'll see you on Friday because we're back with the twice a week. So thank you for downloading the Tackling Life podcast. For more Tackling Life content, go to tacklinglifepodcast.com. You can find links to our pages on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and other podcast sites where you can subscribe and get two all new episodes automatically downloaded every week. When you visit the Tackling Life website, you'll find links to our Facebook and Twitter pages where you can give us feedback, questions, ideas, and suggestions. You can also call us at 646-762-4432. That's 646-762-4432. please embrace that shoestring perspective that Ray taught today. I think that is powerful, and it's coming from a legend. Hey, listen, if you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Until next time, for the legend, Ray Lewis, I'm Dr. Christian Carter.